From KUOW, this is Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Here on Soundside, we like to take time to highlight our Pacific Northwest neighbors. That's the people in our region doing interesting and unique work that you might not have heard about. Soundside spoke with Steve Malone from the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network about something he calls exotic events. Seismographs are picking up rumblings from sources other than earthquakes all the time. And in those cases, scientists have to become detectives to track down just what created those exotic events, is what they're called. For Steve Malone, chasing those sources is a hobby as much as it is a science. Last year, Soundside producer Alec Cowan spoke with him about how he unravels the rumblings above and below the Earth's crust.
Seismology really takes two forms. Whatever shakes the ground sends vibrations through the ground, and they can be recorded by sensors. And those recordings, called seismograms, then can be used to sort of interpret both the structure of the Earth, and that's usually called exploration seismology, or something about the sources themselves, or earthquake seismology. But sort of a subset of earthquake seismology is trying to study sources that actually aren't earthquakes, but something else that makes the ground vibrate. Okay, my name is Steve Malone. I'm a research professor emeritus at the University of Washington in the Department of Earth and Space Sciences. I'm basically a seismologist. Seismology is fascinating, and it can be more than a vocation. I keep dabbling in it, and when interesting things wiggle the seismographs, I take a look and try to figure them out. An experienced seismic analyst or seismologist can look at the wiggles and have some sort of idea about what probably caused them. For example, I've been known to look at a set of things and say, oh, this is an earthquake. This happens to be a glacier quake, which means as the glacier slides on a bed on, say, on one of our high stations on Mount Rainier, it does so sort of with a jerk. As it jerks, it sets up a little bit of a vibration. And we can see that on the seismogram. And then in other cases, I can say, oh, and look, here are people walking by. We have a sort of a famous case for our station that's located at Camp Sherman, in which the instrument is located near the trail that goes from the sort of the camping hut area down by the outhouse. And the instrument's close to that trail. And so it turns out during the climbing season, you can actually see when the climbers get up to use the potty before they start climbing. A little known use of seismology to study the bathroom habits of mountain climbers.
So you have a phrase that you use for these kinds of non-earthquake sounds, and you call them exotic events. Where does that name come from?
I'm not sure where it came from, other than maybe I made it up. I mean, other people may call it too, but it's exotic in the sense that most seismologists are interested in earthquakes. And so anything that's not an earthquake or earthquake-like, you might say is unusual or exotic. I have a few colleagues who take exception to my use of that term for it. They prefer something that's not, doesn't quite sound quite so wild and crazy, but it's okay with me.
And is anything that turns up on a seismograph that's not an earthquake considered an exotic event, or are there kind of, I guess, nuances here?
So someone jumping up and down near one of the seismographs would show up there. But we probably would not really interpret that necessarily as being anything of interest. In fact, that's something we often call seismic noise. And that can be due to all sorts of things, such as the wind blowing a nearby tree, a car going by, a rabbit hopping over the seismograph, etc. But as the saying goes, one person's noise may be another's signal. So conceivably, there might be somebody that was interested in how much the trees wiggled when the wind blew.
So what's an example of something that's an exotic event?
Other types of earth motions, for example, a rockfall or a landslide, or maybe even an avalanche of snow. Debris flows, a swish of water and rocks and debris that shake the ground, and that could be considered an exotic event. And of course, in addition to those, there are the events that are purely in the atmosphere. And those are as mundane and boring as just, you know, airplane noise, jet planes going over or helicopters flying by. These generally we don't take any extra effort to study because there's so many, and you know, they're pretty well understood and known.
Maybe this is a bit of a seismology 101 question, but how do you actually read a seismogram? What does that look like?
Normally, your seismograms, you might say, are really fairly boring. If you were imagining a needle writing a line on a paper, it's roughly a flat line with little tiny wiggles now and then. But if an earthquake takes place and so the ground shakes, then that needle will suddenly deviate and it will swing back and forth in response to the ground motion. And earthquakes can have complex sources, so they shake more or less at different times. Not only that, but the earth divides up the shaking into different types of waves that travel at different speeds. So depending upon how far you are away from the source, from the earthquake itself, then these waves arrive at different times. The first ones we call the primary or P waves, and the second set we call the secondary or S waves. And then there are all sorts of other complicated sets of waves that are reflections where they are bouncing off different things. And so seismograms from an earthquake can look fairly complicated. But essentially, that's it. A straight line, deviations up and down, and finally dying out after several seconds, tens of seconds, or for a very large earthquake, it can take many minutes to hours before the shaking actually quits.
How do you go from registering an exotic event to actually figuring out what caused it?
I can't remember exactly when, but maybe last fall. Turned out to be, we could identify it from other sources, a bunch of rocket parts, I guess. Someone's booster stage or rocket part was re-entering the atmosphere over West Washington, Northwest Oregon. And it broke up into many pieces. And these pieces traveled west to east over the Cascades into eastern Washington. And they left a series of sonic booms that we recorded, but the pattern of this was very, very unusual. I worked on it a long time trying to figure out how we could get booms in many different places almost at the same time, because anything that's traveling along at a certain velocity, the booms should be likewise spaced out in that time, or the sound waves are traveling away, you should see them arriving at roughly the speed of sound in the air. But these booms were really much too fast, way too fast for any of that. And we still really don't understand it. When I was trying to explain this to my wife, who is not a seismologist, and she said, well, it sounds like a bunch of different pieces entered the atmosphere at the same time. And indeed, looking at some of the videos of the apparent meteor thing, you can see that it's spread out over quite a long line. So, sometimes it's the quote citizen scientist who looks at it with a fresh eye that brings it to your attention of what it probably could be. We still don't know for sure.
So how did you get into seismology?
I knew I wanted to do something that was physics-based, but had a component that would take me outside. I loved the mountains, I loved hiking, climbing, skiing, etc. And if I could mix a little work with that, the physics, that would work for me.
It's interesting that you say that, because it sounds like your job is a lot of waiting around and looking at charts. That doesn't sound like it's too often out in the wild.
You're sort of right. And the analysis of the data is not in the field much, if at all. But the field work entails actually installing the instrumentation. And sometimes that can be quite complex. Sometimes it can be quite adventuresome, like putting a seismograph on the top of Mount Rainier or up in the Sherman Crater at Mount Baker. There are probably more than 500 individual sites. And sometimes it is sort of, boring, laborious types of things, just changing batteries on instruments, things like that. One of the more frightening times was back in 1980 on Mount St. Helens. And I was sort of one of the seismologists, maybe the lead seismologist, trying to put in instruments and analyze the data and advise the volcanologist and the civil authorities, et cetera, on what was going on as far as the shaking. And one of the seismographs we installed was on what's called the Dog's Head, or it was then, about two-thirds of the way up the volcano. And we flew in by helicopter, me and a technician and a student, and dug holes and planted antennas and did all this. We were there for a few hours. And during that time, there were several earthquakes took place right within the volcano, strong enough that it made it feel like you could be shaken off the side. So it definitely got one's adrenaline up, made you work a little faster.
Were there any exotic events that stood out to you in your early career?
And there are other cases. I can remember even in grad school where we had cases where there were these strange booms that were occurring out in the middle of Nevada, central desert area. There are very few people out there, and so you can't get other sources of ground truth from people observing something. But we would see these things appear on our seismograms at different times that look sort of like sonic booms, but they were scattered out, and the way they would occur was really very different. And we came up with the thought that they were probably high-speed military aircraft, maybe supersonic, that were doing training runs or something out there. So we called around the various military air bases in the region, and of course, no one would admit to anything. That's just sort of the way the way they are. They usually won't tell you. And so we were left pretty much as a mystery. Until one of our technical staff happened to be in the field one day when we had recorded one of these things. And when he got back to the shop, he said, "Wow, I was standing on this ridge and suddenly there was this big boom. And I look up and there's this plane going away from me, and it's diving down into the valley, and then it's going up over the next ridge." And he said, "It was fast." So I think it confirmed what it was. So it was some military exercise flying very close to the ground surface in a relatively uninhabited, in fact, quite remote part of Nevada that our seismographs were in, but he just happened to be there too and could confirm it.
Can you tell what caused the sound just by looking at the shape and form of the wiggles?
Sometimes if you only have seismology, then you're never for sure. But if there's some other source of data, maybe visual or other reports or some other source, then you can sort of tie the pieces together and pin it down pretty closely. Obviously, there may be cases where there's not other sources of data and you can't, but mostly we've been able to do so to our satisfaction anyway.
And is there anything that you do with that information once you've kind of got an idea of what an event might be, or is tracking these down mostly just a hobby for retired seismologists?
In a few cases, when some real detail has taken place that I think was somewhat unusual, for example, with the space shuttle re-entering the atmosphere, we'll publish a regular science paper that gets reviewed and looked at in the science journals. But for the most part, these are just curiosities that that retired seismologists keep dabbling with.
Did you think that so much of your work would be made up of, I guess, what sounds like detective work?
Maybe a little bit, yes, because, you know, even if you go back to the natural world of just plain earthquakes, there's a lot that is not understood about them. And so science in many ways is a little bit like detective work. You you get data, that maybe the crime people call them clues, we call it data. I mean, we're all used to seeing the world with our eyes, maybe our ears. And this is through vibrations in the ground, yeah.
That was Soundside producer Alec Cowan talking with seismologist Steve Malone last year. And if you have someone you'd recommend we talk to about their interesting work or hobby that they do in the region, let us know. You can email us at soundside@kuow.org or leave us a voicemail at 206-221-3213. Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime right here online at KUOW.org, or of course on your favorite podcast app.